episode is sponsored by Cytiva. Cytiva, now with the life sciences business from Paul, is a global provider of the technologies, services, and expertise that researchers and biopharma companies need to bring transformative medicines from discovery to delivery. Learn more at cytiva.com. That's CYTIVA.com.
You're listening to Podnosis, the pulse of the healthcare industry. I'm your host, Ayla Ellison. In this episode, we rewind to January 2019, when Fierce Healthcare unveiled its inaugural Fierce 15, spotlighting 15 private companies doing pioneering work and making waves in healthcare innovation. Today, you'll hear from leaders of two of those companies, CityBlock Health and Civica Rx. Up first is CityBlock Health, a tech-driven, value-based provider dedicated to serving Medicaid patients and lower-income Medicare beneficiaries. Fierce Healthcare Senior Editor Heather Landy chats with Dr. Cameron Matthews, the Chief Health Officer at CityBlock Health. Let's dive into the conversation now.
Hi, Dr. Matthews. Thank you so much for joining me. It's really great to chat with you again.
Oh, I'm so excited to talk with you, Heather.
In January 2019, Fierce Healthcare launched the first annual Fierce 15. CityBlock, which was only 2 years old at the time, was part of that inaugural class. At that time, CityBlock had just opened its first neighborhood hub and had about 100 employees. How would you describe CityBlock's current state, and how has it grown in just the 2 years that you've been there?
Oh, I love this question. Our current state is strong. I have had such a, honestly, an honored time being here these 2 years, just seeing the way that we have strengthened across all of our markets, the way that we've grown, the way that our staff has grown, the way that our model has matured. So I think we're doing quite well and really looking forward to a strong 2024 as well.
So CityBlock recently opened its first flagship health hub in Brooklyn. Can you tell me a little bit about this health hub and what's the significance of opening this facility?
Oh, I love this new hub. The first time I walked into it, I just had my jaw dropped. It's right there in Bed-Stuy, and I was excited to be there on our ribbon cutting morning. And it's really about providing a member-centric space. It's our first kind of standalone facility. We did have two other hubs in New York, but we're really considering this to be our flagship, where we're really going to be able to provide our CityBlock members with our exceptional clinical care, community space. It's a touchdown point for our home-based teams as well, too, so that they can, of course, keep their supplies, but also have the ability to reach out to the rest of the care team. We're really excited that this new hub is just going to be a central place for both our members as well as our employees to meet and to improve healthcare, to be honest. So much about kind of the physical environment has such a strong impact on how we're able to provide care. And we're really excited about this new hub.
For our listeners who might not be that as familiar with CityBlock, can you just kind of describe what is distinct about CityBlock's model, the populations that you focus on, your approach to providing care?
Oh, of course. So we are an advanced primary care practice. We work in a value-based care business model and are focused on Medicaid and dually eligible populations. So dually eligible for Medicare and Medicaid. So a focus on low income, a focus on marginalized communities. And we're doing so obviously needing to have an intentional approach to health equity, an intentional approach, therefore, to social drivers. Drivers of health. Our members have very complex needs. About 85% of our members have two or more chronic conditions. 47% have behavioral health needs. And so our model really seeks to integrate physical care, behavioral health, and social services in order to make sure that really we're improving our members' health outcomes.
What do you think are some lessons learned along the way as CityBlock is focused on this population? You know, what are lessons learned in terms of what this population needs and the best way to serve them?
Great question, because we're learning every day. First and foremost, we knew at the beginning, but we have refined over time the importance of trust and the importance of engaging our members before we direct them to any sort of clinical services, whether it's within our clinics or through other providers in their health network. We need to earn their trust. There can be no assumption that they would really adhere to anything that we recommend without really making sure that we have a connection with them. So our community health partners, along with our entire care team, are really there to make sure that we're meeting our members where they are and that we're providing them with the appropriate communication tools, the appropriate connections, whether it's in the home or the hub or virtually, in order to meet their needs and to work with them to really make sure that we're setting goals with their priorities in mind, not our own. So what we've been able to really refine over the past 6 years is how we engage with them. We have different modalities now, how we're actually connected with them about different, let's say, chronic conditions, whether it's their behavioral health or diabetes, how we're connecting with them through our mobile integrated care unit. So we knew at the beginning, trust and engagement was important, but how to actually become more and more successful in engaging them, we're proud to say we've been quite successful with that.
And I like how you brought up the trust issue, because you can provide digital tools to patients. You can put a clinic on a corner, but you have to engage those patients.
My assumption, and this has been the case throughout my entire career, being that I've always worked with marginalized communities, my assumption is that they are coming in with some level of trauma from previous interactions. And they may not necessarily be trauma from a physical concern, but either emotional or neglect, even within the healthcare system that they've engaged with previously. So we need to help them overcome really the lack of trust, the rightful lack of trust that they have. And so engaging with us, it's not about pushing our own agenda, but acknowledging that they have priorities that we need to meet up front.
I'm actually seeing more attention, more awareness of the Medicaid population. I'm seeing more funding going into startups that are focused on this population, which is probably a long time coming. It's good news that there's more attention, more investor interest. Are you seeing more activity in that space? What are your thoughts on that?
We are definitely seeing more. I do agree. To be honest, it's about time.
Yeah.
For these communities that we're serving, that I've served, again, my whole career, it's really been a travesty of the healthcare system that we don't have solutions that are designed to meet their needs, as opposed to designed for other needs and then applied to these Medicaid populations. And then everyone wonders why they're not working. So I'm actually quite eager for the different, you know, some may think of it as competitors. I say we need more and more healthcare systems, startups focused on these communities for us to have any impact across the entire population from a health equity standpoint. So I say, let's continue to have more dialogue. Let's continue to have the competitiveness of new solutions so that we can do right by the communities that we're seeking to serve.
One of the things that I really like about my publications, Fierce 15, is that we're obviously highlighting these companies that are doing innovative pioneering work. But it's also, I think I like doing these where are they now type of interviews, because I think it's important to chart kind of the journey. You know, healthcare is, it's hard to work in healthcare. Mm-hmm. It's hard to make an impact in this industry. And I think it's very easy as a journalist to write about the funding rounds and to kind of focus on like the daily news of this company got this much funding or this company signed this partnership. But it's important to keep that longer term journey in mind. Your career spans different organizations. You worked at the VA. You worked at different organizations. What would be kind of your advice to other startups in healthcare? What has been some key learnings for you in terms of doing this work in healthcare?
I think more than anything, we need to remember to strike the balance between seeking scale and keeping healthcare local. And I think oftentimes different organizations lean a little too heavily in one direction or the other. I think scale is necessary in order for us, as I said before, to bring solutions to more and more communities and more individuals. But I think we need to recognize that the level of standardization that is often forced through scale doesn't necessarily serve every community. So you need very localized solutions. You need localized partnerships. You need care teams that know the local community, that are from the local community. And so I have seen, particularly across the VA, but also actually across communities in Chicago with one of my FQHCs. We need to pay attention and engage with the communities that we're serving, and they need to have ownership in what solutions are being brought, are being proposed first and foremost, not being assumed that they can even be implemented. And we're doing that in City Block. I mean, health is local, and I'm glad that we're really seeking to do so, arguably from a radical positioning as we try to transform really how they're receiving and engaging with their healthcare as individuals and as families.
Right. And getting back to City Block's work with the health hubs, are there plans to open similar facilities in other locations?
We will as we continue to grow. At this point, we're eager in 2024 again for adding more members, potentially adding more states, more to come about that. And we will need that physical space, yes, to connect with our members when it's necessary. So we are so excited for this Bed-Stuy location. It's really been designed quite beautifully. We would definitely look to replicate that as we continue to grow in our existing markets as well as new.
Where do you see City Block going? Where do you think City Block will be in 5 years?
Oh, in 5 years. I think we're going to remain really the premier value-based primary care practice for this population. I think within primary care, there's a need to have this level of specialization where we are focused with intention on particular communities. I think we'll have other competitors, as we've talked about, but I think we'll remain innovative in seeking really new programs that we can offer our members. And we'll be reaching, maybe exponential might be a little bit too hopeful, but we'll be reaching more and more members and providing them those new programs. We'll be expanding beyond just our current clinical services as well. I think in 5 years, the innovation is going to really go more broadly as City Block determines different ways to not only help our members, but also our partners, the insurance partners that we work with. How do we actually help solve their issues to make sure that we're really optimizing services for the Medicaid beneficiaries that they're serving as well too. So I'm very hopeful for the next 5 years.
It'll be very interesting to watch. As we've now entered 2024, do you have any predictions for healthcare that you could share?
I'm excited, honestly, for AI and the additional support that it's going to bring our care teams. I think it's going to relieve a great amount of administrative burden, and I'm ecstatic for what is really unprecedented growth in this area. We're getting more comfortable with how we can use AI in a lot of different administrative places. I'm not necessarily there yet for kind of clinical decision-making through AI tools, but the administrative needs that our care teams and our administrative teams have can really be supported by AI. And I think 2024, if you're thinking about the growth and expansion of AI just in 2023 alone, I think 24 is going to continue to have us implementing new solutions that, again, will help our workforce more than anything.
Dr. Matthews, it's been great chatting with you as always. Thanks again for joining me.
Oh, thanks so much, Heather.
Now, we're shifting to another standout from the Fierce 15 class of 2019, Civica Rx. A nonprofit generic drug company, Civica Rx positions itself as a solution for hospitals grappling with drug shortages and the impact of high-priced medications. Today, Fierce Healthcare's Noah Tong chats with CEO Ned McCoy, who takes us through Civica Rx's journey over the last few years. From its formation in 2018, governed by major health systems like Mayo Clinic and Intermountain, to now working with 1,500 member hospitals across the U.S. You'll also hear about what's next for the company, from a mission to lower the price of insulin to opening a new manufacturing facility. Here they are.
Hi, Ned. Thanks for joining me.
Oh, thanks for having me, Noah.
You're currently president and CEO of Civica Rx, but you've been with the company since 2018, first as a chief business officer and most recently as a chief operating officer before taking over in 2021. You've been able to see this company really evolve from the beginning, like few others have. How would you describe Civica's mission and how has the company evolved in the last 5 or so years?
It's been a wonderful ride so far, and it's surpassed all of my expectations. We're really the result of a lot of dedicated organizations and people coming together to solve problems. And we formed this nonprofit, non-stock pharmaceutical company initially to address drug shortages, which was a huge problem in hospital systems and a huge problem for patients, the pharmacists, and the doctors who have to treat them across the country. So we formed the company 5 years ago, and we've just made great progress.
How many health systems do you work with, and how many generic drugs are available today? Kind of where did you start off with that, and how have you guys progressed since then?
We started the company, the initial thought from the hospital systems that started the company and the philanthropic organizations that started was that we're going to build a manufacturing plant and make our own medications and supply these to the hospital systems because there was huge problems with shortages. This has been a problem that's persisted for 2 decades. And they came together to say, we can only address this collectively. Let's build a plant. Let's make these drugs. And we actually found a way to get there quicker. We secured capacity from existing operations. We had a preference for U.S. Manufacturing. So to answer your question about the hospital systems, we have 55 hospital systems that are members of Civica. They have 1,500 hospitals across the U.S., which accounts for about 1/3 of the hospital beds in the U.S. Today, we have 80 medications that were selected because they're either on shortage or at risk for shortage. And we've already, in our short life, we've already delivered 150 million containers of medications, injectable medications, without interruption. And that's enough medication to treat 65 million patients. So really great progress so far on that front.
And then can you talk a little bit about the impact that has, not only for the patient, but have you heard from health systems about how that is so helpful for them?
Yeah, for this side of the business, for the hospital business, you know, we're able to provide products that are on shortage. Just to demonstrate that, 18 of our top 25 medications are currently on the ASHP shortage list. Last year, when there was a tornado in North Carolina that damaged the largest injectable facility in the U.S., we did a quick cross-check overnight of our medications and determined that we had 21 medications that were made at that plant that was hit by the tornado. And we were able to supply those 2 times the forecast for our hospital systems to them, 2x of what they required in order to carry them through that time period. Also, I will share, just for folks that love data and follow the industry, one of our hospital systems published a paper just in October in the New England Journal of Medicine where they did a 3-year study along with Cambridge University, did a 3-year study of the medications they were purchasing, and they found scientifically, this is a peer-reviewed paper, that Civica was able to supply medications during the shortage at a significantly higher rate than any products they could get from the wholesalers from the total of 62 other manufacturers. So we were able to beat 62 other manufacturers from the wholesaler. And what was a little bit of a surprise to me, we thought we were doing essentially a parity, is they actually save money because Civica charges one price to all of our customers, just one price. And we don't change that price during a shortage. So we have a flat price. And during shortages, the prices tend to sawtooth up and down. And over 3 years, we actually saved them money and supplied more medications.
Well, the company announced in 2021 how you're going to build a manufacturing facility in Virginia to address drug shortages. How has that progressed? What's the status of that now?
I mean, this is kind of the realization of that dream we had from the beginning, is to have a manufacturing plant, be able to make our own medications. I'm happy to say that the plant, the construction's complete. We have the equipment all in place and we're getting that equipment up and running. We're hiring and training staff. We're already at 100 employees on site, planning to go to about 250. And we're in the process of starting the making product where we can file for FDA approval of all these medications coming out of the plant. It's 140,000 square feet, but we also spent about $140 million. The plant has the capability to make 90 million vials a year, but also 50 million prefilled syringes. And then a new add is we're putting in a line to make about 80 million cartridges a year, and these are cartridges that go into pens, and these are pre-filled disposable pens for administering insulin, which is something new that we've taken on. It's always been a dream to not only tackle shortage medications, but also attack or address, try to solve the problem of generic medications that are priced too high. And in retail, insulin is a poster child for that. Insulin is 100 years old. It was invented over 100 years ago. The products are essentially generic. However, the market's dominated by three big manufacturers. And because of the way our system works, without getting into a lot of detail, the price is way too high in the marketplace. So we've announced that we'll be able to make the three and sell the three most used insulins that account for about 80% of the market. We'll be able to sell those for no more retail than $30 a vial or $55 for five pens, essentially $11 a pen. And that's the retail price at the pharmacy. We're in the process of developing those now. And we just think that it is just a shame that so many people with diabetes in the U.S. ration their insulin because they can't afford it. And so we're trying to make insulin affordable for all. In fact, the latest statistics I've seen show that about 1 in 6 diabetics ration their insulin. And that we think that's just not right.
I know you've been with the company since before it began. Has it been something that's been really challenging to you that you didn't expect? What's the biggest thing that you think kind of to learn along the way that you didn't maybe anticipate?
That's a great question, Noah. Not too many people ask me that question, but I'd say the thing about Civica is we're unique. We're nonprofit, which means we're breaking even. We're not chasing profit. We're here to solve problems. We're here to make a market impact, not to gain market share. And so you have to change your thinking. If you are, I'll tell you early on, you know, my first job at Civica in doing business development and doing deals with other companies, many times I was asked if I wanted exclusivity for a product. And I'm like, absolutely not. We want the most supply and the most product on the market as possible. We want you to keep selling. We want you to supply the market, and we'll supply the Civica members. So you have to think about things very differently than you do than if you were for profit. We're for the patient. We're not for a profit.
Thank you for listening to Podnosis. I'm your host, Ayla Ellison. You can find out more about this topic in our show notes at fiercehealthcare.com. Look for podcasts. And don't forget to tune in every Wednesday morning to Podnosis, where healthcare is our beat.